Hey Reg, how you doing, my friend? There we go. Get the microphone in the right spot. All the time. I don't know. Anyway, you ready to go? Good. Me too. I won't even wait for your answer. Your nod is enough. All right, let's do it. Episode 435. I'll give you the three S's. I'll give you the countdown, you give me the music, I'll give you a podcast. All right. 435. Put it in the books. Here we go. Star, smile, strong, 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, while listening is important, getting out there and spreading the word is just as important. So tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you hear, we got lots of Elton Jim podcasts for you. Just go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and man, are you in for a treat. Podcast after podcast after podcast. Just keep loading more and scrolling down. Just keep going and going. They go back for years and years. We've been doing this since May 2016. We've been doing this for 435 podcasts. Welcome to episode 435. So, wanted to talk about, not a phenomenon anymore. This is far from a phenomenon, but I think if you're a certain age, you wonder where or when or how the phenomenon not only started, but at least I'm a little surprised how not only is it still around, it seems to be as popular as ever. It's almost a part of the culture for some people that it's just a normal part of going out and having fun. A lot of what we do and what we enjoy and how we have a good time, especially socializing with other people, really is dependent on when you were born and what was the social norms, right? I mean, that's common sense. But the older you get, there are more newer generations you encounter. There's a short period of time. It seems even shorter than ever today because the world is moving so much faster with the way the technology has just jump-started everything over the last 15, 20 years. But there was a time when in your world, when what you were doing was the thing to do, others followed you, and you, and I say this in the collective sense, set the tone. Your age group, your social group, in a wide range, not just your buddies or your friends that you hang around with, but your generation, if you will, set the tone. And I've talked about this many times. It's mostly it used to be mostly in your 20s and maybe your early 30s is when most of the time when a generation has, to me, I would think, has its most impact on setting the trends. At least it used to be that way. I would say mid-20s into the mid-30s. Now, in today's world, very different. I mean, you would consider the 20s and your 30s a youth culture. Most people would, but the term youth culture now, I think, has been redefined. As I said, as technology has redefined us. And today, I have argued many ways that it's teenagers that are leading the way of both sexes. I truly believe in terms of in the cell, you can't underestimate, I've said this many times, in terms of cell phone, smartphone technology and the impact and influence that it has on us today, I believe that is fully influenced by 14-year-old females because they are social beings to the nth degree, and the smartphone has become a social device. And they are the ones who are most active in using the tools, and not only using the existing tools, but by their behavior influencing the tools that are developed for tomorrow. They use the current tools and they help influence the tools of tomorrow in terms of the capabilities and applications of the smartphone. Young males do too, but not as much, because they have other interests too. Don't get me wrong. I think young males, young boys, are also addicted to the phone, but I think they use it for different reasons, and maybe not as 24 hours a day. I mean, if you look around, and I enjoy to some extent being a social observer as well. And if there's a group of young people, yes, they will all be on their phones, but if you look closer, the young women, the young girls will all be on their phones. And while the young guys may be in their groups, they will be, some of them will be on their phone, but not as intensely and not for as long a period of time. You know, I just think that guys have a quicker attention span. They need different, stimuli. But it seems to teenage girls, they can do seven things at one time. They truly can multitask, and they could talk to their friends, but they could be talking to their friends and doing something, but they're on that phone. And so naturally, if you're a company that's looking to generate revenue from that phone, you look to that age group. But there was a time when it was a little older, when technology wasn't as fast. I remember being in my 20s and 30s, early 30s, and doing what everybody did, and everybody thought it was cool, and everybody thought it was right, and everybody thought it was the best thing in the world to do. And then as time went on, those little trends, those little fads fade, and you begin to settle into different behaviors, and before you know it, you look behind you, and there's a new generation that is doing things just like you did. And the other side of the coin is they're not involving you in it, just as you didn't. They're not being mean. They're not being excluding. It's their generation. It's hard to accept that as you get older. And a lot of times we are tempted to try to do that and be with the in crowd. But that just doesn't work. It's called an in crowd for a reason. And sadly, age is a part of it. Yes, there's discrimination and there's prejudice involved. But, you know, that's, you know, we're always trying to bash those kind of things. And I'm not promoting prejudice and discrimination. But what I'm saying is they seem to be built into our DNA. And certainly when we're discriminating against race or gender or preferences and things like that, you know, that's not right. But it does seem that we have to fight against that. That seems to be our natural inclination. And maybe in the evolutionary table, that is inherently there because perhaps initially it was meant for our survival. Don't forget, so everything behaviorally, which seems to be instinctual to human beings, and which we've seen over the millennium and the decades, the centuries, how human behavior doesn't really change to a great extent in the founding and in the foundational parts of our behavior is it was all based on survival. Well, they said, watch the animals. It's about survival. And we still have that, even though to survive in this world from being eaten by your your predator is not a fear as much as it was, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago for the human species. The code of survival and procreation is still what drives this species. And perhaps we needed that to propagate, to stay around. But at the same time, it can be exclusionary as far as human behavior goes. When those dominant younger generations take hold, they are surrounded by themselves. Their world looks at their peer group, not so much at those who are younger or those that are older, but those that are like. And as I said, they drive the culture. So you're saying, wow, Jim, you're getting this is getting to be very philosophical and very, you know, sociological. My goodness. Were you a sociology major in college? No, I wasn't. No. Just been around for a while and enjoy observing. And you say, Jim, what is the point of this podcast? What are you talking about? Wow, this sounds like a high school or a college lecture. Well, hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully it's interesting. But it does, you say, well, get to the point, Jim. Okay, then I will. Somehow I'm going to tie what I just said in. I'm going to tie that all into something that you're going to go, what? This is what you're talking about? And you got into, you know, sociology and behavioral sciences here about the evolution of man, and this is what you're talking about? Well, yeah, I think they connect. As I said, I think a lot of my ramblings, I try to have connecting dots, and I think this does connect. And you say, well, then what are you connecting all this to? All this stuff about the human species and generations and behaviors and attitudes and survival instincts. What are you talking about? All right, I'll tell you. Karaoke. That's right. Yes, karaoke. What? Whoa, you've really gone out on a limb this time. I mean, what karaoke? How did you get into this sociological discussion about the evolution of man, and now you're talking about karaoke, some pastime that you do at a party or a bar? What are you talking about? Well, hold on. Don't dismiss. Don't dismiss. Let me explain. The karaoke phenomenon now has been around for certainly more than 20-some years, certainly in the American world. I believe it started in Asia. That's the word I believe has an Asian background to it. And it slowly found its way into the culture 20, maybe even 30 years ago. Now, like I say, I've said to you many times, I am not a big, bar go out. I don't go to bars a lot. I like to socialize with friends, but I'm not really big into bars. Never, even when I was of age, I grew weary of the bar scene very early on. I can still go to a bar and have fun with some friends, but I like one that's not too loud. I enjoy the social interaction. But I would, if you talk to me, I would rather go. If we need alcohol, I mean, I'm not a big drinker, but I enjoy a group setting or a one-on-one setting where I really can relate to the person. And when you're at a bar, there's so many distractions. I understand, the pub, right? The word public house. I get it. It's where you come to socialize with people. In today's world, there's sporting events on big screens, and there's trivia games. It's the meeting place. It still is. And people have a few of these drinks and that drinks, but I get it. But I always find I'm yelling in a bar, or there's so much activity that it's. If you're in a very big whoa-ho mood, I get it. But from my standpoint, it just seems that if I really want to connect with people and talk with people and bond with people, it's so loud and distracting and sensory overload that I just not my thing. It's okay. I believe me. I know I'm in a very small minority. I get that, especially with today's younger people. The bar is just a natural extension of any social event. It either begins at the bar or ends at the bar. You might start somewhere else, but you end up at a bar. Or maybe you just start there and you stay there. But it's all incorporated. I get that. And for some people, it's a natural setting. I'm not judging, just telling you my preferences. So I don't really know when the karaoke phenomenon really started to take hold in the United States, because I would assume that it started in a bar, nightclub kind of atmosphere. And then slowly, it became such a popular pastime for people, social pastime, that it just grew. But it had to have grown out of, I would think, public congregating, and most likely bars. And you heard about karaoke bars, right? I believe it happened in Japan first and made its way, and now it's there's whole systems and everything like that. I'm sure it started sometime, in the 60s and 70s, because music was so popular. But I don't know how popular it became here until maybe sometime in the, it feels like 90s. I don't know. Maybe it was going on in the 80s. I don't think so because videos, MTV was so popular in the 80s. And it seems to me that it would have been a natural extension of the home of the video, of the music video, to once music became this visual medium and people were singing along and dancing along to a visual, the music became much more mass accepted because of MTV and because of the music video. And then after that, you'd see these people performing the songs. And so then it might have become a natural extension that if you're seeing people perform the songs, that perhaps you would then become inspired to either copy their performances or do it your own. So really, as I said, I'm sure that somewhere in Japan this kind of idea started, from what I understand, but I really do believe that that MTV had to have played a role in this. It just seems like a natural progression. As music got more popular, people were singing along to songs on the radio, and then boom, as I said, we're a visual medium. We're a visual species. And once the videos became so dominant in our culture beginning in the 80s and throughout the 80s, that, you know, once again, it was passive. We're watching other people. But then something else clicked, and it was the same thing. Yes, there were video games in the 80s, you know, and they started to get more sophisticated with the technology. But it was really in the 90s when video games became a permanent part of this culture. You now have 50-year-olds who are dedicated and have been playing video games for all their lives, and it is a part of their life. It is not a fad. It is not a hobby. It is a regular part of their lives. People in their early to even late mid-50s, video games are there. They are a ingrained, indelible part. And once again, I think what the video did, whether it was video music or video games, sports games, you know, karaoke, you can look as a video game, any kind of game, there was a need for, and that's why this, the generations since the 90s on, they need to participate. They are more active. Now, they're not active physically because they're sitting home and playing a game. They're not running around. We used to go actually play the games. We'd play baseball out on a park. We'd play basketball. We played football. But there is a deeper need today to be the player. You know, we played baseball and things like that, but then we could still enjoy watching the game and being a passive observer of those who played it. In today's world, that is not the case. There has to be some kind of stake involved. There has to be some kind of personal involvement. That's why we have so much gambling today, because people want to have a stake in the game, a reason to watch it. They can't just watch it for the excitement of the game or the appreciation of the game. They have to have something on the line, some personal involvement, whether it's money. That's why the growth of fantasy leagues starting in the 90s, they started to explode, and now they are permanent parts of the culture. Fantasy leagues with their drafts, and I've got this guy and that guy. I've got my team. It's very individualized. And today people need to feel not just an appreciation for the game, but a personal connection. If they can't play it physically, They have to have some skin in it, whether it is money, whether it is their fantasy team. Maybe they're not, if they weren't able to physically play the game because they weren't athletically inclined, you could learn to play that. You could pass that ball. You can hit that ball on a video game easier than you can in real life. And so, once again, that gave a whole generation of people that maybe weren't athletically inclined an ability to participate and play the game in a different manner. And that's what karaoke is. We all, you know, we could go to a concert and appreciate the concert, but in today's world, everybody's a performer. People are performing on TikTok. They're performing on Instagram. They're recording themselves. People today are active participants. They are not passive. It used to be somewhat of a passive entertainment experience. We would watch others. That's gone. We have to be in it. We have to be doing it personally. And the technology allowed us that feeling, that need, and that outlet to do it. Not in the purest sense, but in an alternate reality sense that still gave us the feeling of that same participation that those who were the professional singers or those who were the professional sports people had and experienced. Not everyone can do it. It used to be those with the talent can do it. Today, technology has allowed those that might not be able to hit a ball or sing a perfect note who rose in their professions, but technology has said, we're going to give you another way to do it. We're going to get you involved. And that's a big shift. You talk about behaviors. I think about my parents in their generation. My parents had the same group of friends for 50 years, and this is no exaggeration. Once a month, this group of 10 or 12 people, five or six couples, once a month for as long as I can remember until they aged out and started to pass away. It was that long. And they were friends from when they were kids. Especially the guys, and then they got married and they all got married, but they stayed together as couples and groups, and they got together once a month for at least 50 years, if not more. And they started, yes, by going out and it's like, okay, it's this person's month. Okay, they're going to plan something. Okay, we're going to go to a play. We're going to go here. We're going to go to dinner, whatever. Then as time went on and they got older, they still got together. But then it became more of, okay, we're going to go to that person's house. They didn't go out to bars anymore because it wasn't their scene anymore. Their generation wasn't driving the train. It seems this is just a natural progression of human behavior. And so, yeah, when my parents were younger, I remember them going out with their friends. We're going to go see a play. We're going to go to a restaurant. We're going to go to do some activity. We're going to go bowling, whatever. That was their monthly get-together with the club, as they called it. But then, as they got a little older, I noticed just observing that they weren't going to plays or they weren't going to events. They weren't going to concerts or going to see somebody perform. It's like, oh, we're going to go by blah, blah, blah's house. And then it became a much, a more low key event. It was more about getting together. And it was probably not only the more about getting it together and talking a little more, but it was also the fact that as they got older, a new generation was doing things, and they didn't feel a part of that. And so they continued to socialize in their own way. And as I said, they did that up until they're in their 70s. That club was what they called it club. Club is this week, and it was sacred. to some of the people. Like, hey, you know, you can't go. What do you mean you're not coming this week? We all know what the dates are. This is supposed to be on your calendar. This is a priority. We've already marked out the dates. It's the third Saturday of every month is club. So you don't make, you know, I mean, certainly other obligations came, but the idea was you make, this is that when you're getting plans, you say, I can't do it on that date because you've already got plans. It was that important. It was that much of a priority for them. And I tried to do that, I saw how it kept my parents' friends and their social group together for many years, all through their lives, and it looked pretty cool. And so I remember when I was in my mid to late 30s saying to either friends and either family members that were of my age, we should put together a club like this so that we don't lose touch, because life will get more complicated, priorities will change, but let's make sure that this becomes such a priority to us that it stays in the same standing, that our friendship and our getting together is just as important to some extent as all these other outside things that may come our way. But it didn't work. Because I think we're a different generation. That generation was used to socializing like that. People would go to people's houses all the time, uninvited. The joke was there was always a coffee cake by somebody's house. You know, all of a sudden the door would ring. The knock on the door, doorbell would ring, and people would come over. And people were ready to, people always had coffee and a coffee cake ready because someone was most likely going to come over. And those days are over. Now, we go out. We are social animals. We have to be out in a crowd, especially the younger group, because now, you know, your likes, your world is based on how much you can show the other world how cool you are and what you're doing, and you're out active all the time. You got to post, likes, views. And so, there is many more bars and nightclubs and social gathering places. And as I said, what has continued to become a major part of our socialization and is now, I believe, completely embedded into the culture of behavior is karaoke. And you say, well, Jim, where did this come from? Not being someone that went out to bars even in my mid to late 30s as much, I should certainly be a karaoke veteran. Because if indeed the karaoke boom, which I believe, you know, at least started to take hold, it may have been around, yes, it started here in 1982. I'm talking about being a very prevalent and accepted part of the culture. It really wasn't until the 90s. But once again, that was I was still in my late 20s. At that time, but I wasn't going out to bars as much. So maybe I didn't find that as much. But clearly, over the last 30 years, karaoke has not only become more popular, as I said before, it is embedded into the culture. It is a go-to part of social interaction and social entertainment. And the reason I say that is, over the last couple of months, I've gone to some gatherings that have been attended by mostly younger people than me. People in their mid-20s and 30s and maybe even early 40s, but mostly in their 20s. And 30s and early 40s, right around there, 20s and 30s, maybe a few in their early 40s, but mostly that. And then there's me and a few other people. And I was shocked to see that karaoke wasn't even like a question. It was a major setup. Like, okay, so, okay, everybody, we're going to get together. We're going to have the food. We're going to do this. And then we've got the karaoke there. There's bars that have regular karaoke nights, karaoke times, or karaoke bars. It is a part of it. I just through osmosis, just walking down streets where there are popular bars, you could hear, especially in the summer, the people singing. You see the signs, karaoke. Or bars are just known. Well, they have the karaoke every Saturday from 10 o'clock on. You know, everybody's got, mostly it's later because everybody's got to get a little drunk to get the courage up there, a little liquid courage to get up there and sing. Most people can't sing, but that's the democracy, of technology. Anybody can be a singer. There was a time when you'd say, well, I'm going to go and see Frank Sinatra at a nightclub. Now you're saying, I'm going to go and sing at karaoke. Well, you're not a great singer. Doesn't matter. As I've said many times, we have become a much more narcissistic society, and the idea of getting up and look at me, watch me, is a part of our culture now. And karaoke plays right into it and may have actually helped cement the narcissism in a slow way as a major conduit of what the cell phone and the smartphone has done for social media and socialization. Karaoke may have been a forerunner to that because it was a new technology that allowed people, just like video games, to be active participants, not sitting and watching someone else sing, but you getting up there and singing. Even if it's not good, doesn't matter. And especially in today's world, in today's culture, which we've become less judgmental, it's not good to be judgmental. So someone gets up there, and as long as you tried, you get a good applause. Even if it wasn't good, people will applaud you. I think that's an outgrowth of the, once again, in the 90s, the everybody who participates gets a trophy. I think the growth of karaoke can be tied to that. Because most people that go to a karaoke bar, most of them really can't sing. But it doesn't matter. They get up there and they do it. And the crowd claps for them. Even though, I mean, now if there's someone who's really good, though, people will go crazy. But even if you're not, people will applaud you. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. But it's a change in behavior. People used to be hesitant to get up in front of a crowd. Today, people can't wait to get up into a crowd. And technology has I think, led that way. But as I said, I've gone to a few events, so that's why I brought this up, because I'm noticing it more and more. And I was like, wow, you know, people in their 20s and 30s, this karaoke, this is serious stuff. And now, I'm not a trained singer. I can sing. I have sung in public. I've been in stage musicals. I have sung at social events with a band. I have sung with the karaoke machine at times. And I can carry a tune. I'm not a great singer, but I can get by, and some people say, wow, nice job. But I'm not a trained singer. And as I said, I don't really have a problem with getting up in front of people, but there's a lot of people that this is, you know, karaoke has been something of a revelation for them, because maybe it's helped them work on their shyness. It's helped them work on their if they're introverted, to actually get up in front of a crowd. It takes a lot of guts to do that. And I've seen some people that, as I said, are not really singers, but they still do it. Good for them, and they have a good time doing it. So there's nothing wrong with it. I'm not putting it down, but I'm just, as an observer, I'm saying, wow, not being so much of a bar person, I didn't know just how embedded karaoke is now, because we've had a generation and a half, at least, that have grown up doing it all the time. doing it at parties, and then doing it in bars, and now it's become, oh, let's go to karaoke. It's a go-to option when they're socializing. Let's go to a bar. Well, which bar? Well, let's go to this bar because it's karaoke today. Oh, great. Boom. And what I've noticed, too, is because, yes, there's no question, you know, if you go up there and you do karaoke, you want to be good. You don't want to embarrass yourself. And so, you know, you find a song that you like, but you also find a song that you can sing fairly well, at least. You know, no one's going to go up there and be a Frank Sinatra or Barbara Streisand or something. I'm not expecting that from the average person, because not everybody can sing. But there's some songs that are easier to sing than others. There's some songs that are more popular than others, especially if you're at a karaoke bar. If you get a song that's real popular, you almost sing it and sing along. And if people are there, they may help you out by singing along with you. And so this way, if you're not that good, but you get the crowd into it, it becomes a crowd-pleasing experience for everybody. The people are having fun hearing the song, and you're having fun leading them and being a part of it, and you're the catalyst for it. So a lot of times, what I've noticed now is that people, who really enjoy karaoke, and they go on a regular basis, but they have like a whole act choreographed, sometimes with props. They have several go-to songs. They know. They don't go, geez, I wonder what song I'm going to do. They go there knowing what song they're going to do. They've tested it out at several other karaoke bars to say, not only can I do this, but the crowd seems to like it. I enjoy doing it. And I get some really good positive reaction after I do it. So these are my couple of, you know, go-to songs that I can sing and do a good job at and be crowd-pleasing. And for someone like me that doesn't really go to karaoke bars, it's not a question of me not being able to or want to, being afraid to, but it's just not in my regular choices. Like, don't get me wrong. You know, when I'm in a crowd of people, especially with a lot of people that I know, I'm very social, and I have no problems getting up and performing. Like I said, I do plays, I do these, you know, I'm on the radio and things like that. I'm a performer at heart. But because I certainly want to make sure that when I do it good. Some people don't care. They just enjoy the social interaction of it. But because I've done it somewhat professionally, I have a little higher sense of, well, I don't want to do this song. My voice isn't sounding good today, or I don't know which song I can do. I don't know. That's difficult. But I see some people that get up there and do it, and they don't care. They have no voice. They can't carry a tune, and they don't care. And they've got their go-to songs. And they get up there, and it might be terrible, but when they're up there, they are looking at that screen, and they are trying or singing their hearts out. They think they are Mick Jagger. They think they are Frank Sinatra. They think they are Pat Benatar. They think they are Barbara Streisand. Now, once again, sometimes when I do go to these karaoke events like this, I am with some of the theater people that I know. That's mostly where I'm in these kind of younger groups, because most plays that I am in and most kind of theatrical projects I'm in now, I'm amongst the older people. It's a young person's game, right? And that's where I'm seeing this behavior and seeing, they're all going to karaoke bar. Come on, Jim, go to karaoke, have a party. Oh, we got a party. We're going to have some food. We're going to do this thing. And we got karaoke too. Boom. And as soon as we're done eating Or if you go to this bar, boom, they're already signing up at the bar to be on there, you know, to be called for their karaoke. If they're at the party, they've already talked to the guy that brought the machine. I mean, today it's on people's phones and their computers, and they, well, you bring a microphone and a small speaker, and you're set. Once again, the technology has made it such that you can do karaoke anywhere at this point. It used to be you had to be have this whole big professional rig, but once again, as technology continues to get more sophisticated, it doesn't take much to set up a karaoke thing anywhere, in a bar, at a party, in your house. Doesn't take much at all. As I said, I was at this private party that was only about maybe 15 of us, if that, and boom, it was. Karaoke is the centerpiece. Yeah, there's food, but we're going to karaoke. And most of these people, as I said, were in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, and they all had go-to songs. Some of them, as I said, now these are people that are in musicals. They do have voices. They are a little more theatrically inclined, a little more dramatic, if you will. So when you go there, it's like, woof, ah. You know, these people are, they really can do it. It's intimidating for anybody. But then there's some people that aren't necessarily, they might be in plays and stuff, but they might just be in more straight dramatic plays who are not in musicals, and they really aren't big singers, but they don't matter. It doesn't matter because, once again, A, it's about the socialization, I think. And it's about the look at me and being a part of this little activity. And yes, there's some people that are great at it, but even the ones who aren't, it doesn't matter. And they are not looked down on. They're contributing. It's an interesting socialization. And as I said, as I sat and watched it, and I saw them all getting into it and all doing it, and some were great and some were horrible. But I looked at it and I said, and I was certainly tempted to do it. I've done it in front of people. But I felt like almost like, well, you know, that's their thing. And they wanted me to, come on, Jim, do it. You know, come on, Jim, what's your go-to song? And I realized, since I'm not into this world, even as much as they are, this is probably a very regular part of their social, you know, their social activities on a weekend basis. It's not mine. I don't have a go-to song. That probably part of my age. I don't have a go-to song. Now, I have some songs that I know I could sing and that I would sing. But first of all, part of it was, you know, this karaoke experience, especially this one party I went to, was the impetus for this podcast, because I really felt old at this event, because there wasn't one song that any of them did. Now, obviously, I pride myself on my musical knowledge, but I must admit, at this point in this part of my life, my musical knowledge, there used to be a time when my musical knowledge was impeccable. You couldn't stump me on anything. From the current music back into the past. But I would say probably over the last 25 years at least, if not at least the last 20, I haven't kept up with the new music, if you will. And so, no, if I can't watch these shows now, like Name That Tune or something like that, because they play contemporary songs and I don't know the bands, I don't know the songs, I don't know the lyrics. And so that has been a difficult transition for me to get used to being out of the loop. But it's not because I couldn't get in the loop. It's because when I was in the loop for that music spoke to me and turned me on, and I related to it. And so it wasn't a chore. It was natural. It was inspiring. I was drawn to it. But as you get older, the people that are making the music are now younger than you, and they're writing to their own generation. They're not writing to me. And so I have less in common with that music. I don't mean to be out of touch. It's just that my generation is not driving the culture anymore. And a Taylor Swift song doesn't resonate with me. Because I know that, don't worry about the breakup. You'll get over it. But if you're in your 20s, that if you're in a romance or something like that, and you break up, that's life defining at the time, and it consumes you. And the older you get, you realize, remember how silly I was, how important I thought this certain thing was, and that's the thing. Contemporary music is written for the contemporary audience, for the people that are shared, just like I shared the common bond with the people that I like. They've gotten older. I've aged with them. And now they're writing on about stuff that I can relate to more. It's not about hating the current music. It's just that it doesn't inspire me. So it's not written for me. It's not speaking to me. It's not supposed to. So when I was watching these people do all these karaoke songs, I mean, I was baffled at, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. They did this for at least, I eventually left, and they were still going strong. But for 2 hours, they were up there singing songs. And I can honestly say I did not know one of the songs that they chose. No, I shouldn't say no. There was one song. I don't know the words, but at least I was familiar with it. It was the song that came out a few years ago from The Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga. I think it's called Falling. That was the only song. And I didn't know, I don't know the words to it all, but at least I was aware of that song because it became a very popular song from that film. But all the rest of the songs, I never heard of the bands or the singers or the songs themselves. And they all knew everyone and they were singing along with it. I'm going to do blah, blah, blah. Oh, great. Cool. And I realized, you know, and I felt a little weird not going up, and they wanted me to go up. And I didn't want to sound like a spoil sport, but I'm like, you know what? If I had a go-to song for karaoke, it would probably be Summer Wind by Frank Sinatra, right? The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair and walk with me. Well, you know what? I thought, no, I can do that song great, I think. I could sell that, at least in a karaoke situation. But I'm like, if I go up there and sing a Frank Sinatra song, I am going to be playing right into the stereotype of there's old white guy Jim singing a Frank Sinatra song instead of singing a cool newer song. And of course, people say, Jim, come and sing, you know, sing an Elton John song, sing I'm Still Standing. They there's about five, they're not even five songs that they may know. But singing, you know, the problem with singing an Elton John song is it's not easy to sing an Elton John song. That's why very few people cover Elton John songs, because it's not easy to sing his songs, especially his early songs. His voice had many octaves. He sang falsettos, he sang low, he sang high, sang extremely high, all within one song. Think of the song Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. Whoa! I mean, he can't even do it anymore. So, you know, come on, sing an Elton John song. I was like, well, so I did have actually a good excuse, because I'm doing this play and I'm like, oh, I don't want to, you know, strain my voice. I've got shows this weekend. So that was kind of my my fake excuse. I don't know if they bought it or not. But what really, I felt a little out of place. I felt very old because I said, as I saw the songs they were doing, I'm like, wow, I don't know one of these songs. And if I come out and say I'm going to do a Frank Sinatra song, they might look at me like, and once again, this might be my own ego and my own fear of acceptance. Like, oh, they're going to, oh, he's doing an old man song. Maybe they would have said, wow, that's great. We don't know that song. Or we don't, but we love Frank Sinatra, even though we might not know him all that much. And wow, you did that great. That may have been the reaction. But I did feel a little out of place there. And they weren't doing anything on purpose. They weren't trying. I mean, a lot of this may have just been my own, because I felt I was, you know, putting my own feelings on the situation. They weren't being rude to me. They were encouraging me to participate. But I just felt a little out of it because it was so natural to them. They came prepared, even if they were great singers or not. And it was like their bonding experience with each other. And while I wanted to bond with them and I get along with them, but there was a generational difference. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I realized that, okay, well, moving forward, I've been thinking about it ever since. It was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I've been thinking about it. I'm like, okay, well, maybe I self-imposed this, you know, reaction if I get up there and sang a Frank Sinatra song. So maybe the next time I'm going to be ready. Because like I said, I've sung in public. I've sung a lot of times, like I said, Frank Sinatra songs. I sing Bruce Springsteen songs. Those are kind of easy to sing. He doesn't have that great of a voice to some extent. You can sort of growl and get through those. Now, one song that I have performed quite a bit over the last 20 years, both at karaoke bars and just with musical accompaniment, you know, in a bar or on a stage somewhere, is the Louis Armstrong song, What a Wonderful World. You know, I see, you know, trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Okay. But you know what I've noticed now? And a friend of mine mentioned this to me, and I didn't really take it too seriously. I thought he was overreacting. But in some social situations, I've noticed now that, believe me, I love Louis Armstrong. I love his voice. I love his persona. I've got a statue of Louis Armstrong in my house, okay? I'm a big Louis Armstrong fan. I love his music. I love his energy. And I love doing this song like him, as a tribute to him. In my view, I'm trying to do it to introduce, if people know the song and they hear, you know, me do the impersonation of Louis Armstrong, they go, wow, that was great. And if they don't know it, they go, wow, what was that song? It's my way of helping to keep the Louis Armstrong music and the spirit and his legacy alive in some small little way by me singing the song. However, in today's society, which is very, you know, in some ways we are not judgmental, in some ways we are. And there is a major, contingent that, you know, says, you know, you can't do, if you're, you know, you can't miss, you know, can't appropriate another race or another culture's music. That's theirs, and you can't do it. And so while I've done it and I've gotten a positive reaction, I also notice as now the years go on, it gets a less of a recognition by people who maybe not even know the song and maybe don't even know Louis Armstrong. But if they do, I wonder, I nobody's come up and told me, like, that was a very rude thing to do, an impersonation of Louis Armstrong, because, you know, he's a black entertainer and you know, you're misappropriating his music. That's the farthest thing from my mind. From my standpoint, it's a tribute to Louis Armstrong, and it's an effort to keep his music and legacy alive. But some people don't view it that way, which is very disappointing to me, because certainly I'm not out to offend anyone, but also I'm saddened because then the music doesn't get out there. Now, some people could say, well, you could sing the song on its own without doing the impersonation. Yes, I could. But to me, the way he sings it is so defining that if I can do that and maybe impart even some of the uniqueness that he did by impersonating him, then maybe people will go look up that song. If they hear me do it, they might not look it up. But if they hear me do it as Louis Armstrong, they might say, wow, what does that sound like? Let me hear the original. But I'm now second-guessing whether I should ever do my Louis Armstrong impersonation in a bigger public venue, because I don't want to offend anybody or put this image that I'm misappropriating Louis Armstrong's music, because it's exactly the opposite. I'm trying to promote it and extend it and expose it. So even from that standpoint, I wonder, you know, my song selection. Once again, it doesn't take much in this culture to say that that's wrong. And the people that say it's wrong, they seem to know the rules. And those of us who don't know the rules go, what, why, what's wrong with that? And, you get it. They'll tell you exactly why. So, sadly, to some extent, my lack of participation in the karaoke thing might be self-imposed or might be a fear of being socially inappropriate. So maybe it's best to just sit back and watch. I don't like doing that either, but I don't know if that's a part of the aging process, that there comes a time when you do have to pass the torch to the older generation. And you can enjoy and you can remember and you can do it on your own, but there might be a time. I don't know. That I'm in a very interesting space here in my life, because I'm not old and I'm not young. And so there's an interesting transition as to where you fit in. And I don't mean to make karaoke some big defining or dividing line, but when I sat and watched these people doing the karaoke, it was second nature to them. It wasn't second nature to me. It was a part of their social interaction on a regular basis. It wasn't. And the songs that they chose, they all bonded on, and I didn't know any of them. So in some ways, I felt a little out of it, a little disconnected, that it's like, well, that's their thing. As I said, they didn't, I don't think, purposely do that. But their bonding on it was natural, as it should be. So maybe I was reading too much into this, but I looked at it and said that might be just a social thing that's for that group and maybe not me. I don't know. Believe me, doing karaoke shouldn't be this big of a decision, but it was in that moment of, do I get up there and risk having eyes rolled at me? Do I risk possibly offending somebody if I do this Louis Armstrong thing, which I know I can do very well, and which in the past, before there was such a social enigma to it, was very well received. Impersonating somebody of any race wasn't looked down upon 25 years ago, but it is today, depending on who it is and who's doing it. So at the risk of singing a song that they wouldn't know and they wouldn't bond with, at the risk of possibly offending them, and as a risk of intruding on their thing, even though they were more than welcoming, It was my interpretation. Am I intruding on their time? That I sat back. I certainly could have sung the one song. It wouldn't have hurt my voice. But there was other thoughts and things that were keeping me from diving in. And maybe those are things that I have to get over. But it did occur to me that at the very least, if you're going to be a social animal in today's world, you better have a go-to karaoke song and be damned of what it is. So I, you know what, the next time I'm going to get up there, and I think I'm going to sing Summer Wind because, okay, that's a there's an old white guy singing an old white guy song, and they might say, well, that figures. And maybe that's just what I am in their world. But my wife recently went to an event and someone, a social event at work, and they said the same thing. Oh, we're going to, you know, when you karaoke, what's your go-to song? And she said, I don't really have one. And then she mentioned a, you know, she likes Janis Joplin, and she mentioned the song Mercedes-Benz, which is really not a very well-known, you know, it's a kind of a novelty song. It's a well-known song to some extent, but most people know, you know, Give a Little Piece of My Heart, or obviously Bobby McGee is in terms of the big, you know, Janis Joplin songs. But she's there's this one song called Mercedes-Benz that she likes. But so even then she said, oh, Mercedes-Benz by Janis Joplin. And once again, you know, it shows her age. Now, Janis Joplin was before she was born, but it was within, you know, her early lifetime. And so, you know, you risk then either showing your age or being of that time. But I guess that's something that you either have to get over, or you know, if you let it consume you, then you will be an outsider. So I guess I just have to turn my brain off and just go for it. But definitely moving forward, I think from a social situation, I got to find out. And I've got to get a go-to karaoke song. That is now a needed part in your social tool belt. When you go out socially, you need a go-to karaoke song, at least in the situations I've been in of late. So I'm going to sit down and find out what are my one or two karaoke go-to songs that I like, that I can perform well, and that might actually, you know, go over in a big crowd. But you got to have those in your back pocket, folks. So once again, I always say, I'd love to find out, do you have a go-to karaoke song? I don't know how old you are, whether you're younger or older, whatever the case may be. If you do karaoke, do you have a karaoke go-to song? And if you do, I'd love for you to go on my Facebook page and let me know what it is, just to get an idea of some of the songs that are out there that people enjoy singing and that other people enjoy hearing them sing. And at the same time, if you don't have a karaoke song, then maybe I'll inspire you to get one. But you know what? When you go to a bar today, you know your favorite drink, you know your favorite appetizer. And now I believe just as important as what'll you have, whether it's a drink or an appetizer, the next most important thing that you have to have as a favorite is what are you singing? You need a go-to karaoke song. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 435. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears, the summer wind came blowing in from across the sea. It lingered there to touch your hair.